We are in a fight to preserve the constitutional freedoms to override the socialist agenda with the Out Loud Truth. From the heartland in flyover country, here are Chief Tom Jackson and Detective Dan Jackson.
Listening to The Uncomfortable Truth from the Heartland with your hosts, former Ferguson, Missouri Police Chief Tom Jackson and retired Detective Dan Jackson. That's me. I'm the better looking one.
Delusional.
Delusional, maybe, but I'm still the better looking one.
Right.
What are we going to talk about today? Let's talk about the socialist assault on our Constitution. That's really why we're here, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. It's getting actually scary. The September debates between the presidential contenders on the Democratic side was, in a word, frightening.
Yeah.
The things they're proposing, everything from confiscating weapons to reparations and everything in between, they're just looking to spend trillions of dollars on all kinds of programs, whatever those are.
Whatever they are. Yeah, it's insane. I mean, they're talking about, well, Beto O'Rourke, you know, hell yeah, we're going to take your AR-15s and your AK-47s. He's not even making a pretense about gun confiscation. They're trying to override the constitutional Second Amendment, and they're trying to push this idea that by taking guns away from law-abiding Americans, tens of millions of us, somehow they're going to cause criminals to behave themselves and not commit violent crimes. And it's just insane. Makes no sense at all.
Yeah, they used to pretend that they weren't for gun confiscation. They said, nobody's coming after your guns, and all we want to do is have common sense gun laws. But that pretense is gone now.
Pretense is gone.
When Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who's ashamed to be himself, just said it right there on the stage. Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15 and your AK-47. What these weapon confiscation laws are going to come down to is they're going to define assault weapon as any semi-automatic, high capacity, or just a semi-automatic weapon as you know, something you have to give up. And you know, in the definitions that they're going to be putting forward, a revolver would qualify as a semi-automatic weapon because every time you pull the trigger, it fires until it's empty, and it rechambers around after every single trigger pull.
Yes, it does.
So you wouldn't be able to own revolvers with the definitions that are being battered around by these
knuckleheads.
Yeah,
knuckleheads. Yeah. They're extremists. And they don't even pretend to be middle of the road, like you said. New York State. When they passed their middle of the night gun law, they were in such a hurry to pass that law that they inadvertently made all of their police officers felons, because police officers were all carrying guns that exceeded their magazine capacity, and they forgot to exclude law enforcement. They were in that big a hurry to try and limit firearms ownership of their citizens. And what does it do, really? I mean, yeah, everybody wants to do something. The media carries shootings. Shootings are horrible, especially mass shootings, and people want to do something. We want to do something.
Absolutely.
You and I do.
Absolutely.
But disarming law-abiding citizens is not going to do anything, and it doesn't matter how much you wish it's going to or how much you want to pretend that somehow if we pass yet another gun law that the feds don't have the manpower or money to enforce, that somehow that's going to make bad guys kinder and gentler. It's just not going to happen.
No, absolutely not. And the government confiscating weapons is really the reason we have the Second Amendment.
It's exactly why we have the Second Amendment. Yeah, they're talking about overriding the Second Amendment, and there's going to be a lot of constitutional battles, but the way they're talking about overriding it is with their red flag laws.
Mm-hmm. Those are scary because depending on how you define a person who's a danger to themselves or others, you know, you can... someone can make a phone call, a revenge call, and the next thing you know, some authorities are at your door wanting your weapons.
Yep. And you didn't do a thing. You just made somebody mad, and they called the authorities.
Absolutely.
Shades of the Soviet Union, huh?
Yeah.
Shades of Nazi Germany. People that are so busy accusing us and accusing Trump and accusing Republicans of being Nazis are the ones who are attempting to engage in Nazi behavior.
Oh, sure. You can't install fascism until you disarm the people.
That's exactly right.
That's what the Russians did. That's what the Chinese did. That's what Hitler did.
Adolf Hitler. Yep.
And the entire population became subject to his whims.
That's what's going on in Venezuela right now. You know, Venezuela used to be a prosperous, free, democratic country, and look at it now.
Oh yeah, that's the face of socialism.
That is the face of socialism, and that is what the so-called Democrat candidates, let's just call them what they are, the socialist and Marxist candidates for president of the United States, and that's what they're looking at, ultimately. Whether they realize it or not, you know, whether they're sane enough to realize that this is what they're going for, or whether they're just crazy, or whether they're just throwing things out there trying to pander to a crowd that they think is going to elect them to the highest office in the land, what they're going for is what Venezuela has now. And we can't let that happen to us.
Oh, absolutely not. I had an opportunity earlier this year in February to visit Cuba during the short period of time where they had the cultural exchange.
The cultural exchange.
Which is, you know, that was a joke that didn't really exist, but that was the pretense under which, you know, we went. And, you know, the old Spanish architecture there was absolutely beautiful, but it was in a total state of decay. They don't have the money to repair anything, and the citizens are absolutely subject to the oppression of the leaders, you know, up until recently, the Castros. We had a tour guide that took us around one of the cities, and he, by profession, he was a school teacher. And his salary, his monthly salary as a school teacher, was the equivalent of $25 per month. Now, you know, probably people on our tour bus all tipped him more than that.
That's crazy.
You know, just in a single day, you know, on a 4-hour tour.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's what communism gives you. The people have very limited diet, rice and chicken mostly. The restaurants are are almost exclusively government owned. And there was a park, you know, like a city square that we visited, and it was an area where the residents could access the internet from, I think, 1 to 3 in the afternoon. It's the only time.
From 1 to 3 in the afternoon.
The only time and place when the internet was accessible. And of course, there's so much censorship of sites.
Right.
Even on ship off port, we couldn't access, you know, many sites through the internet.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Total government control. We're not going to let that happen here. There's 300 million of us, and most of us are not crazy extremists, in spite of what the mainstream media, the willing puppets of these socialist Democrats would have us believe. We are not in favor of that form of government. We're a free people.
Right.
We have a constitution. We value our freedoms. We value our rights, and we're going to keep it that way. And the NRA is one of those organizations that's going to help us keep it that way. And in San Francisco, city of San Francisco declared the NRA a domestic terrorist organization. That's 5 million of us, more or less, who belong to an organization that espouses firearm safety, firearms responsibility, and firearms education, and they called us domestic terrorists. Why?
Because they can't get the guns any other way. This is a method, a step, a way that they think they might be able to go about confiscating weapons from law-abiding citizens so they can install their, you know, oppressive fascist regime that they claim they're trying to beat.
Well, San Francisco is well on the way there. You know, the city is, have you been there? I've been there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did the Escape from Alcatraz triathlon there in 2005.
Yeah, yeah. It's they pay homeless people, they give them a stipend for being homeless so that they can go out on the street and aggressively beg from you, and it doesn't matter what mannerisms they exhibit because they're already getting paid by the city. You know, we clean up after our dogs better than they clean up after their homeless denizens. You can be sitting there at an outdoor bistro enjoying a meal and somebody will just come along and defecate in the street right there in front of you. And then drop their city-supplied used heroin syringe. And we clean up after our dogs better than that.
Sure. And, you know, the sad thing is it's such a beautiful area. You know, the Napa Valley nearby, the wine country, you know, the coast, coastal highways is gorgeous. And they're willingly just gradually turning it over to people living in tent cities all over the city. And of course, it's happening all over the country as well.
Yeah. You've seen the pictures from Los Angeles, Skid Row, they call it, the area of Skid Row on the outskirts of Los Angeles. That's just, it's a miserable ghetto looking tent city. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It looks like a third world, but it's right there in one of the most populous cities in America. And one of the most prosperous cities in America too. And that's the home of Hollywood. There's a lot of money in Hollywood.
Yeah. But there's also it's 500 square blocks is where that tent city is essentially.
Yeah.
It's a huge section of the city.
It is. And it's normal citizens are afraid to go there. The police won't go in there without backup because it's a hostile area. And the city doesn't back the police. The police have their hands tied by it because the city wants to put out the image that they're the kinder, gentler place that is a sanctuary city for illegal aliens and a sanctuary for homeless people who can come there and flock there and don't have to worry about the other places that they were run out of. And it's a terrible backlash.
It really is. And it's not just the city that's not backing the police there in California. They just passed a state law that says citizens don't have to help the police.
Isn't that crazy?
It's nuts that you would even come forward with a law like that, because that's putting out a subject that wasn't a subject, that
right.
wasn't a topic until they put it out there. Why would you say you don't have to help the police? Why don't you just allow people to help the police?
It was a deliberate gesture.
Yeah.
And it was a deliberate gesture put forward by a legislator who said that that law was a throwback to an earlier time and that law was a vestige of capturing runaway slaves. Well, the law came into effect after slavery was gone, first of all. And second of all, California was never a slave state. California was a free state. And back in the 1850s, when they were admitting states, when California was admitted, they normally, the United States, would admit a slave state for every free state so they could keep that balance and keep their fragile coalition going in the Congress between the free states and the slave states. California was admitted without a counterbalancing slave state. It was admitted as a free state, never a slave state, and the law came into effect after slavery was abolished. So how is it a throwback to earlier days of...
Well, you're confusing the issue with facts.
Yeah.
And that's an uncomfortable truth.
In effect, it is an uncomfortable truth. It's one of many that we're going to be talking about. The unfortunate thing, though, the really scary thing is, though, that law was put forward by one knucklehead. The entire California legislature passed that law, and then their governor signed it. And like you said, they made a non-issue an issue. They made a deliberate gesture out of telling people, you don't have to help the police. It's no longer a legal requirement. You can walk right on by and not help them out. You can stand there with your video cameras and just video record while they're being assaulted and asking you for help. It's legal now.
Mm-hmm. And what you're going to end up with is something like what happened here in one of the St. Louis suburbs not too long ago, where a police officer responding to a call was shot and killed. And as he lay there on the ground, people just videoed him dying. Nobody yep. helped him.
And the news media, the all-too-willing news media, ran that video of that officer dying
yes.
on television. Officer's family wasn't even informed that he had been shot and that he was dying before that video was being run on TV. It's obscene.
Yeah. Just another lost American hero. And it seems as though there's a large, we've talked about this, anti-police sense going through the country. Now, we know from being out there that the majority of American people support law enforcement, support law and order, support constitutional rights of everyone. But what gets the headlines is the anti-police activists.
The anti-police activists, which includes presidential candidates. Elizabeth Warren, on the anniversary of the suicide by cop of Michael Brown.
Yeah.
When Michael Brown in your town, Ferguson, assaulted a police officer, attempted to take his gun after the officer was attempting to investigate a strong arm robbery, which Michael Brown committed.
Yep.
And then when the officer tried to arrest him after he'd already been assaulted, and Michael Brown came back again to assault him again and wound up getting himself killed. So that, and the local FBI investigated that, the local Department of Justice, not to be confused with Eric Holder's special unit in D.C.
Sure.
But the local actual working agents and U.S. Attorney's Office looked at this and said it was a legitimate shooting. It was justified. But yet Elizabeth Warren puts out a tweet saying that she stands with those who are seeking justice for Michael Brown on the anniversary of his murder by a white police officer.
I know. And Kamala Harris did the same thing.
She did.
And many others, many other lesser known or lesser in the spotlight people are calling that a murder. And you don't see anybody in the media, you know, outside of a few, but the mainstream media pretty much lets that go.
They do.
As if it's an acceptable fact, even though the truth is that he tried to kill a police officer and died in the process.
Well, it's clearly part of a larger agenda. I mean, the larger agenda is to divide and conquer. You turn people against the police, you turn blacks against whites, you turn poor against rich, you turn people against the government, and you keep that going, and you divide us up into as many groups as you possibly can, and eventually you can conquer us. And I think that's what they're doing.
Well, it's clearly happening, you know, and it seems like an agenda, because now you have people talking about white privilege as if we have to separate ourselves from ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, you have all these different groups now that want to be identified by their specific little identity rather than first and foremost as Americans.
And they're all offended by everything.
Oh, yeah.
They're all offended by what they call, what the academic elite in the media are calling microaggression.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you can be aggressive without even realizing you're being aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently you and I have privilege that we didn't realize that we had.
Yeah, I wish I'd have known. I'd have used it.
Me too. We're living in a time where instead of people saying, let's take what we got, we've got what we got. There have been some dark times in our history. There's no denying that. And there is always going to be racial discrimination. There's always going to be economic prejudice. There's always going to be all sorts of prejudice that exist until human nature changes itself. And we can't do that. But what we can do is take what we've got right now and make it better. Make our own little circle better and try to make things a little better instead of complaining about what happened 50, 100, 150 years ago. There's nothing we can do about any of that.
Well, maybe we continue talking about this after we take a quick break here.
It works for me.
Give you time to take a nap.
You can fix your makeup.
All right. We'll be back shortly.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about identity politics. So let's just pick up with that flow of thought, keep right on going.
Yeah, you know, immigrants into this country have always maintained the identity of the land they came from.
Yeah.
You know, we're Irish Americans, but we're American.
Yes.
Italians, Americans, Greek, French Americans, wherever anyone came from, Latino Americans, African Americans, they hold their heritage, but not to the exclusion of this country and to other people's heritages. And it seems like now you have to hate yourself.
Put yourself down.
Put yourself down, mm-hmm. Yeah, in order to accept someone else's heritage.
Yeah.
As opposed to accepting them both.
And we're seeing that happen left and right with politicians and with a lot of the activists and the agitators that are keeping this whole racial division and evil police killing black people and Democrats versus Republicans. And we're seeing that go on a large scale basis. You know, people are identifying themselves as a group that they're ashamed of in order to try and show the other group how valuable they are.
We're seeing that in politicians like Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Who is?
Robert Francis O'Rourke, isn't it?
Good Irish name.
Yeah.
But you can tell through his speeches that he is ashamed of being a white guy, being an Irish guy, someone of Irish heritage.
Well,
he has to displace that or put that down in order to be accepted by the people on the left.
Hence the Beto.
Right, right.
To me, those are the worst kind of racists, too. Well, let's just get that out there. The worst kind of a racist, to me, is the insidious racist. You know, if someone walks up to you and they say, I don't like you because you're black. I don't like you because you're white. I don't like you because you're Asian. Okay, you're a jackass, but I know where you're coming from. You're not hiding anything. I can deal with you. But when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I'm going to put some issues out there that show how you're being discriminated against, and then I'm going to show how valuable I am, and I'm going to fight those issues for you because you're not capable of doing it yourself. I want you to understand how much better I am than the other people in my race.
Right. I'm going to go out there and prove to you that I'm not a racist. Why should you have to do that?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't your actions just show that you're accepting of everyone else? You don't think you're better than anyone else because of your heritage, and you don't think you're anywhere worse than anyone else because of your heritage.
If race wasn't an issue, why would you be talking about it? Why don't you just treat people like they come to you? You know, somebody's either a good person or a bad person. You know, they've got good characteristics, bad characteristics, but they're all individuals. Just treat them how they come to you. Why do you have to predicate it on their race or their ethnic origin? Why is that a predicating factor in your dealings with them?
Right. And why is O'Rourke, why does he feel the need to identify specifically as an Hispanic?
Well, I think he's probably trying to draw those votes. You know, for the same reason that the Socialist Party, sort of the Democratic Party, is pushing the whole immigration reform thing, which they use to mean, let's just open our borders up and let all the people south of the border just jump over our border without any restrictions, without any background checks, and let's let them vote, because they'll vote for us because we let them in and we're giving them things. And I think that's probably why. He's trying to identify with a group that he thinks is going to vote for him and elect him president.
Sure. That immigration reform is a joke. It's a mockery of real immigration policy.
It is.
Think about this. A lot of schools will not let students who have not been vaccinated attend school until they are. And yet, they're willing to let hundreds, thousands of people just walk across the border and, you know, populate our cities without knowing what sort of, you know, illnesses may be coming across.
It's insanity. It's not a good thought process. They're either not thinking or they're just not smart. Because what is wrong with protecting your borders? What is the idea of protecting our borders is to protect our populace. The number one responsibility of the government is the security of the people.
That's absolutely true.
Everything else is secondary.
And having a good humanitarian immigration policy is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
And people need to understand that they need to abide by the law. When you pick up your family and just walk across the country and cross over into our borders, cross our borders into our country, you're breaking the law. There's a way that you can do it. And
if you're coming for asylum, there are ways to do that.
Absolutely.
You go up to a border checkpoint and you go, I need asylum. And you talk to the border agents and you go from there. You don't sneak across a fence in the middle of the night or sneak across a barren section of the desert, risking the lives of your children and the lives of the rest of your family so that you can sneak into the country and get what you can get.
Yeah. And I understand it. You know, they're looking for the American way of life, which is, you know, still greatest country on the face of the earth.
It is.
And I get that. Now, if I was in their position, I most certainly would probably try to get into this country any way I could. But the first thing I would do is follow the law.
Yep. And if the first thing you would do wasn't follow the law, it's the responsibility of this country to make sure that you do follow the law, because its responsibility is to protect us, the people who are already here, the residents of the country, the citizens.
And the population in some of these small towns near the border and even farther away from the border is growing dramatically with illegal immigrants, to the point where they can't keep up with the services to the people, to the citizens. And that's a big problem with uncontrolled immigration.
Yeah, it is. I'm sitting here nodding at you like, you know, people are going to be able to see me on the radio agreeing with you. Keep forgetting we're on radio. I got a great face for it, don't I?
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I am. Just move on from the general topic of race identity, and let's talk about our politicians, our presidential front runners who are using race politics and identity theft as a means to attempt to gain elected office. Let's talk about Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren, her career was made on her identifying herself as a Native American and or American Indian. She put that down on applications and used that to advance her own career.
She did.
She stole identity from true American Indians, Native Americans, and used that to advance her own career, to achieve a position as a professor at Harvard University. And now she's a United States Senator running for the highest office in the land. And she did it all on the backs of Native Americans by stealing their identity.
That's exactly what she did. She stole their identity. She profited from them. She stole funds, jobs, opportunity, advantage that should rightfully have belonged to some Native American who was less fortunate and trying to pull themselves up. And Elizabeth Warren stole it because she could.
Yeah.
She had the means to.
She got the position that was thought to be given to a Native American.
So we're talking about racial identity or misidentity. What about sexual misidentity?
Well, sure. That's become a very common thing that's impacting the way a lot of institutions do things, most noticeably in our colleges and universities, where they're having to make way for people who identify as a gender that they're not, that doesn't exist. Of course, I know from just trying to get plane tickets recently that you have to identify yourself as either a male or a female.
So there is XX or XY. That's all there is.
Absolutely. Now, if you want to live like a woman, if you're a man and want to live like a woman and identify yourself as a woman, I don't have any problem with that. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? As long as you're not hurting anybody.
But what you don't want to do is have public policy affected by that. Public policy should be determined by the actual genders. Great example of this is in college athletics. You're seeing now men, male athletes, who identify as females competing as women and just trouncing the actual female athletes.
They're stealing from them.
They are.
They're stealing opportunity because female athletes are losing scholarships. They're losing educational opportunities that they would otherwise have competing against other females because they've got men jumping into their competitions and going, I'm a woman, identify as a woman, I'm going to run against you and beat and steal your scholarships.
And certain organizations are allowing that. And I remember years ago when the old Soviet Union would pump their female athletes full of testosterone to the point where the Olympic Committee, you know, started testing. If you were competing as a woman, you had to prove that you were a woman and that you were not, you know, taking male hormones. And now it seems like in certain quarters, all you have to do is say that you're a female and you can participate as a female.
Yeah. Public policy and trying to be shoved down our throat is public acceptance. And it's insane. It's like It's like when we were police officers, you know, you would get a call for somebody who's clearly mentally ill, and you would get there and they would tell you about the gremlins that were in their closet or how the CIA was spying on them through their telephone lines. And I mean, they're clearly mentally ill. They clearly needed help, and you would do what you could to help them out. You didn't pretend that everything was okay and then go out there and proclaim that they were telling the truth about the gremlins or the CIA and try to make everybody else believe it, try to shove it down their throats. To me, it's the same thing. It's taking either a deliberate fraud or mental illness and trying to shove it down the rest of our throats as public policy and as something that if we don't accept it, we're terrible bigots. I'm a terrible bigot if I don't accept that you identify as an attack helicopter.
Right. And it's, again, it goes back to dress however you want, behave however you want, but it shouldn't affect the policies of the country, of institutions, or of businesses.
That's right.
You know, a business should not have to hire you as a female employee if you're not actually one for a particular job that may require, you know, a female model, for example.
Or shouldn't hire you as, say, a Native American when, in fact, you're not.
Right. Because it actually takes away from the people that
it does. It takes away from people that need and deserve.
Sure.
And it's not fair to them.
Yeah. I watched a college track meet where it was a 400-meter run, and the person who was out in front the whole way was a man who identified as a woman and was competing as a woman. And the whole time the race was going on, the broadcasters were referring to him as her. And he actually just trounced the actual female competitors. He stole a gold medal from the woman who should have gotten it. And, I mean, what does that say to these young female athletes, is that a man can become a woman and now he's a better woman than you are?
Yeah. And it steals more than a gold medal. It steals so much more, tangible and intangible. I mean, it doesn't just steal bragging rights in the medal. It steals opportunities and really financial opportunities, academic opportunities. And that's why a lot of them are doing it, because they can't win as males. And they know that they can get away with jumping over and saying, I'm a female and I'm going to compete as a female because you're going to allow it because it's your policy now. And it's a sad state of affairs that we're in. But again, it's all part of the socialist destruction of the United States, isn't it? Really?
It is. It's destroying our national identity, our heritage. Bruce Jenner, for example, won the decathlon way back when in the 70s, was on the cover of Wheaties, the box of Wheaties.
Yep.
Bruce Jenner was arguably the greatest male athlete of our generation.
He was.
And now he's Caitlyn. She's Caitlyn. And she's just an ugly old lady.
Yep. And not really even an ugly old lady. He said recently that he didn't fire it. He just retired it. He didn't even get genetically modified to approximate a female. He's still genetically a male. So what's going on?
Yeah. And what's the point really of putting yourself out there? If you want to do something like that, do it. But he made himself a public figure by doing this.
He did. And the thing, the bigger shame about it is less that he did that than that the media and the sports industry and government officials ran with it and tried to make it normal and make it acceptable. And again, like you said, and like we both believe, you live however you want. Mm-hmm. Dress however you want. Be whoever you want to be. Don't hurt anybody else.
He was honored last year, I think, by one of the sports organizations as the Woman of the Year. So he took that privilege, that honor, from an actual woman.
The woman that it rightfully belonged to.
Who would have gotten it had he not come out publicly and claimed that he was a woman. And really, what did he do to deserve that honor other than buy a wig, get breast implants, and wear high heels?
That's pretty much it. And wear makeup.
Yeah.
And change his name. But he didn't do anything to deserve an honor as a Woman of the Year. I mean, what has he done of consequence since he's identified as a female? Anything?
Nothing comes to mind.
Has he done anything great to better society? Has he done anything great to better his sports? I can't think of anything. Can you?
Nope.
All right. Well, while we're thinking about it, why don't we just take a break?
Okay. Let's do that.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
This recent UN climate change summit that was part of the General Assembly, it's kind of the culmination of years and years and years of politicians mostly telling us that the world's going to end.
You know, right.
Going back to Al Gore with his Earth in the Balance and that big climate change scare.
Yeah, Al Gore's Inconvenient Lies.
There you go.
We're going to talk about his Inconvenient Lies on the Uncomfortable Truth.
Sure. Sure. Anyway, you know, in all of this nonsense coming out of some of these folks, and talk about hypocrites. These folks that are, you know, talking about this or traveling around the world in their private jets talking about this stuff.
Yep.
Al Gore specifically, not to keep bringing him up, but, you know, he's kind of at the forefront of really bringing the falseness of the dire situation to light, when in fact, reality is humanity is constantly making changes to make the world better, safer. It's always what people have done. Well, it kind of culminated around here in the United States with this Green New Deal that was put forth by
Ocasio-Cortez,
And it was a resolution to Congress. I'm sure everybody's heard about it. But it makes a lot of points that some of them quite questionable. For example, number one is that human activity is the dominant cause of observed climate change over the past century. Now, how can you possibly know that?
She can't.
Climate change has been going on since the Earth began.
It has.
Evidence, you know, the receding glaciers that gave us our Great Lakes.
How many ice ages have we had?
Well, too many to count. Climate change was changed by, you know, an asteroid hitting the Earth, which caused the extinction of the dinosaurs and created a whole new climate and a whole new variety of species of life on Earth.
They say a volcano that erupted and exploded with great force in the Mediterranean thousands of years ago changed the climate, created deserts where there weren't any deserts, wiped out islands.
Sure. You know, neither one of us are climate scientists.
Nope.
But you can observe, you can read, you can understand.
If you take the time.
Yeah. One of the things that this thing says is that global temperatures must be kept below 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrialized levels to avoid the most severe impacts of changing climate, which require a global reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from human sources of 40 to 60% by 2030, and be net zero global emissions by 2050. And then it states right after that, whereas because the United States has historically been responsible for a disproportionate amount of greenhouse gas emissions. Now, how can you possibly say that with a straight face?
I say this on the radio, she's just a raging idiot. She is a poster child for the success of Yuri Andropov's active measures. She believes stuff that's not true. She's completely brainwashed. And we'll do another show on that whole thing later. But she's a poster child for the socialist idiocy that has gripped our universities and our government and spewing all kinds of nonsense and lies without any facts. Facts don't matter. All that matters is passion and emotion.
Yeah, but Dan, people are listening to her.
And that's the tragedy of it. People are soundbite oriented. Nobody takes the time to read anymore. Nobody takes the time to investigate anything. They listen to a soundbite from the, oh, think of the children, boo-hoo-hoo, we have to stop this. It's the cows farting and the humans' cars. You know, really? Yes. Is it? Do a little reading.
And it's the United States of America. It's
the biggest United States problem. Yeah.
Why? Because we report our emissions. We track them.
We monitor. We do things to improve our emissions. Because we do things to control and reduce our emissions. So that makes us the worst.
Yeah. The atmosphere is mobile.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't just sit over a single place. And look at some of the worst offenders, really, like India, for example. China, you think they're going to do something about it? Think they're going to reduce their emissions, change their lifestyles to make them weaker?
The fact that their populations are larger than us and their industrial emissions are higher than ours is completely irrelevant to socialist clowns like Ocasio-Cortez. It's completely irrelevant.
Yeah. So what happens if we get rid of all our fossil fuels, air travel, diesel engines?
Commerce stops.
And these are the same people, too, that also want to get rid of all our guns.
Yeah.
So what you have is a completely defenseless society. If all this stuff went into effect in the United States, it would last exactly one day while China, Russia, and Iran were deciding how they were going to split up our country, because we'd be completely defenseless.
Well, that's exactly what they want, isn't it? That's stage four of again, going back to the Soviet Union. Isn't the Soviet Union as we know it anymore, but they set a plan in place decades ago that's still rolling along. We're seeing it playing out here. If that happened, that would be the culmination of the final stage where we would be defenseless subjects, serfs, slaves to the government. And these clowns, AOC and her ilk, would still be riding around in their jets and their cars, and they would still be living well and eating well, and the rest of us be scraping to get whatever we can get, standing in line for hours just to get toilet paper and bread, just like the former Soviet Union. Clowns.
Sure.
They're clowns.
Yeah, it would literally create a two-tiered society, which those being in the politicians, which is them, being in power. Look at Bernie Sanders, you know, constantly preaching about economic inequality and economic justice and Green New Deal type stuff. He's traveling around the country on a private jet himself.
How many places does he have? How many nice cars does he have?
It's hypocrisy in the worst way.
He's a country club communist.
Yeah, he is. Never had an actual job.
Nope.
Just spent his life trying to turn the United States into a communist nation.
Lived in a van down by the river, smoking a lot of dubs and eating government cheese until he got elected to government. And then he was doing the same thing on our dime.
Yeah. So look what else this Green New Deal says. It says climate change, pollution, and environmental destruction have exacerbated systematic racial, regional, social, environmental, and economic injustices, which are they referred to as systemic injustices. Mm. And they get this, by disproportionately affecting indigenous peoples, communities of color, migrant communities, deindustrialized communities, depopulated rural communities, the poor, low-income workers, women, the elderly, the unhoused, people with disabilities, and youth.
That's just about everybody.
Who else is left?
That's about everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand this now. So the climate, the changing climate is going to be meaner to indigenous communities and poor communities than it is to middle-class communities. The climate's going to be meaner to them?
Yeah.
This is a selective thing?
It's going to be different air overhead. It's going to be different heat that's affecting them. It's going to be different rain. You know who's going to get affected if this really happens is the Obamas and their new home on Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Obamas. Talk about country club communists. Huh?
Very much so. Yeah. What a $14 million house.
Did I just say that out loud about a former president of the United States?
I don't know where you got that money. I guess it's a lucrative job being president.
I guess it is.
But, you know, again, look at the hypocrisy. These are people that have spent their political careers telling us not to do certain things because they affect the environment, and that if we don't stop doing those things, the seas are going to rise and our coast is going to disappear. And then they move to the coast. What does that tell you?
Tells you a lot if you pay attention, if you actually pay attention.
So anyway, this Green New Deal wants us to give up everything, all our sources of power, and run everything off of electricity.
Well, it's ridiculous to begin with.
Well, where are you going to get that electricity?
Are you going to fly airplanes with solar panels on top of them, soaking up sunlight to power the jet engines? What if the sun's not shining? What if it's a night flight?
Yeah. You know, I mean, one of the things that could, you know, produce power for, you know, homes and infrastructures is nuclear power. But how are you going to get batteries on airplanes and trains, you know, great big diesel engines with 50, 60 cars? Yeah, you can run them on battery.
Yeah,
or what?
It makes no sense at all. But I don't think it really has to make any sense. I think it's just it's knee-jerk extremism, and it's designed to control us to the greatest extent possible. And you know, maybe not deliberately designed for that by her, because I honestly think that she's not smart enough to think of things like that. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen her say anything that makes me think she's intelligent. But I have seen her see a lot of things that make me think that she's what Lenin used to call a useful idiot. You know, she's just spewing the socialist line without any regard for facts or reality. People elected her. That's the thing that scares me. She got elected by a congressional district.
That's absolutely right. It was one that was held for a long time by an old-timer do-nothing. I mean, very little of the population showed up, you know, during her election. It's not like she had a huge voter turnout. But anyway, it goes on and on and on about all these lofty things that you want to do, infrastructure repair and clean manufacturing and stuff like that, but at the same time, destroying our ability to do it. It's counterintuitive.
It would be
at best.
It would be funny if it wasn't coming from a governmental representative.
I mean, how do you plow fields? How do you harvest the crops?
Well,
how do you bring crops to market and then get them to the cities would starve to death. New York City would starve to death.
It would. You'd have to go back to horse-drawn and ox-drawn plows and wagons to do your farming, but that would be a problem too, because those critters fart a lot, and that creates greenhouse gases, which is destroying the climate, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, they would have us basically going back to living like the Native Americans lived.
Yeah,
a couple hundred, 300, 400 years ago, which was a simple, beautiful lifestyle. You know, they lived in small villages, everybody did their own thing, and they worked together, everybody had a purpose, and so forth. But then what happened? Somebody wanted their stuff and came and took it because they didn't have the resources to defend themselves. And that's really what this is.
Yeah.
This is designed to create. So we have the backdrop of this, and the media, social media, and everybody scaring kids about the end of the world and nobody's doing anything about it.
That makes you mad.
Yeah.
And just ticks me off.
Yeah. And so now they're growing up angry and afraid, as was evidenced by this young girl from Sweden, Greta Thunberg, 16-year-old who has developed quite a following. She's very passionate about what she believes to be true. And she stood up in front of the United Nations and angrily lectured the leaders of the world.
Who invited a child?
I don't understand that. You know, they even had a 12-year-old from Brazil doing that as well.
Who invited children to come lecture the United Nations?
I'm assuming the
United Nations.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
That is pathetic.
Oh yeah, but now So they all had an opportunity to chastise the world, and in particular the United States, for failing to do anything about climate. And of course, it's untrue. You know, I in high school back in the 70s, I took ecology course. It talked about all those types of things, how you preserve the environment, protect the environment, keep the water clean, keep the air clean. And
we've been talking about it for decades.
Yeah, a whole facet of science has just been dedicated to that very thing.
If you drive through rural America, anywhere, you know, drive through Missouri, drive through Kansas, drive through Illinois, you'll see wind farms, unimaginable acreage.
Oh, yeah.
Just wind turbine after wind turbine after wind turbine, and they go on for miles and miles and miles, and they're generating electricity for cities as well as the rural areas that they're in. They're more designed to generate electricity for areas of large population and large electrical use. We are doing things.
Yeah, we have been for a long time. And here, I want to bring up this just came out from Scott Adams. You know, the
guy who writes Dilbert?
Yeah. Cartoonist and essayist, writer. And it's a message for children about climate change. And it starts out, "Dear children, I'm sorry adults have frightened you about climate change and how it might affect your future. You might be less afraid if you knew some facts that adults intentionally do not explain to you. I'll tell you here." And he goes on to say that, you know, the news these days on both sides of the aisle is scary now, regardless of whether it's true or not. He says, "Today, much of the news on the right and left is the opinion that is meant to scare you, not inform you, because scary things get more attention. But most adults know all that scariness isn't real. Most kids do not."
And that's the unfortunate truth right there.
He says, you know, nuclear energy used to be dangerous back in the old days. But he said, "Today's nuclear power plants, the ones built over the last 20 years, have killed zero people." He said, "More people died installing solar panels and falling off roofs than died from nuclear power problems anywhere in the past few decades, anywhere in the world."
And the emissions from those are negligible.
"It's abundant, cheap, clean, with zero carbon emissions. It's a solution to the problems that they're talking about, you know, the carbon emissions. And nuclear energy is supported by both sides of the aisle, so it shouldn't be a problem to really start going in that direction if, in fact, what's happening with fossil fuels is true." And he says, "What about nuclear waste? You know, because people are always talking about how scary that is." He says, "You shouldn't be scared about that, because every country with nuclear energy successfully stores their nuclear waste." And he says, "If you put all the nuclear waste in the world in one place, it would fit on one football field." And he talks about how it's likely that new technology in the future would figure out how to use that nuclear waste to make more energy and just, you know, make it pretty much go away.
Well, that's inconvenient truth. It's not just uncomfortable truth, it's inconvenient truth, because he actually researched stuff. He read things.
Yeah.
He looked for himself.
Sure. And here's something he came up with that I did not know, is that a number of companies have recently built machines that can suck CO2 right out of the air.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Really?
He said right now they're too expensive to use, but, you know, if we need them, they're there. You know, keeping in mind that CO2 is necessary for the planet.
But what does it do with the CO2? Because that's how plants breathe.
Yeah.
Plants that give us our oxygen.
He said plants need CO2 to thrive, so we don't want to remove too much.
Right.
Greenhouses actually pump CO2 to make plants grow better. And, you know, he talks about... he's talking about positive things, where these folks are just like scaring, when in fact he's saying, here's what you can do. And he talks about nuclear energy, talks about these CO2 suction machines.
Well, it's their stock and trade, isn't it?
Yeah.
If they scare you, they control you.
And CO2 scrubbers, which can, you know, get the CO2 out of the emissions before it goes into the atmosphere. Planting trees. You know, I think it's the Sierra Society that's on a mission worldwide to plant 1 billion trees.
Yeah.
That's something. That's something that
Club?
Can be done. Yeah, yeah. Sierra Club. And he talks about, too, in the letter, about how the richest and smartest people on the world are still buying property on the beach, so they don't see a problem right now. One of the things he talks about that we talked about is adults sometimes like to use children to carry their messages because it makes hard for the other side to criticize them without seeming like monsters. And boy, did we see that in this climate change summit at the United Nations.
Yes, we do.
So in any event, I think it's a letter that everybody should read. It's only a few pages long, but it's enlightening, and it offers solid solutions to the problem that is being expressed.
Let's put it up on our social media. We'll have it up on our Facebook page. We'll have it up on Twitter. We'll get it up on the America Out Loud page so that you can link to it and you can read about it.
Yeah,
you can read the letter yourself.
It's one of the most poignant statements on climate change and solutions that I've read, at least recently.
Far more intelligent than that bizarre resolution that AOC wrote, huh?
Well, yeah, that's what I was doing. I was trying to make a comparison between this, you know, death and doom thing. And he's saying, you know, every problem that the world has faced, the United States has ever faced, we've solved.
We have, and we will continue to.
Every
unless,
problem.
Unless our ability to solve it is taken away by the nut jobs that are trying to dominate our government.
Yep.
We're probably running out of time.
We're out of time, yeah.
All right. Let's go find a cigar and a bottle of single malt. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. We'll see you all next time.
All right.